Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Won't you be my lighthouse? Give me sight and lead me on. Oh, shine on me, my lighthouse, and dry my aching bones. Shine on me, my lighthouse, and hear this weary soul. Oh, shine on me, my lighthouse. Make me right and bring me home.
Dude, I just saw as well, in obviously you're going home tomorrow.
Yeah.
In 3 days, you turn 60.
Yeah.
That's unbelievable.
I guess it is, isn't it? Age is such a... it's become... Maybe since I got sober... like a long time ago, 30, when I started kind of like healing my body and like really like started like doing shit, like challenging myself big time, like fighting in the ring, like with real fighters, you know, like getting myself to that point where I could fight in the ring. And then, funny enough, I just put my nose ring back in.
You've not had that for a while, have you?
Not since I started ring fighting in 1995.
Yeah.
And my whole...
So you're going for a sabbatical from the ring fighting, are you?
Well, we were just at the, my wife got her ear pierced. She's like, you should see if your hole's still open. And it was. The guy's like, yeah, it's open.
Straight in.
But, and then, you know, started like a marathon, you know, like did these challenging things, climbing mountains and that kind of stuff. Not saying I'm a badass. It was just things I have to do. In my head to keep physically challenging myself, and it helps with my sobriety, blah, blah, blah. But age, like when I turned 50, I was getting a lot of texts from my friends. It's probably way off subject.
No, dude, you're sowing the seeds for all of the stuff I want to talk with you about today. Okay. So it's beautiful. Please continue.
So I'm turning 50. You know, it's coming up. I don't think about, like, I thought I was a different age when I was 40. Seven. I thought I was 48, and one of my daughters like, "Dad, you're 47." Okay, it gets weird in those ages. Like, I don't know what's wrong.
Because you're not count. It's not like sobriety where you're sometimes counting the days in the early stages. Like,
right?
You know.
And I don't even count sobriety now. It's like my wife like reminds me, "Hey, you're 29 years, you know, or you know, this year will be 30 years, you know." Okay.
It's hugely inspiring to me, Duff. So a bit of context for you. Yeah. I have been in Australia for 3 months. I didn't know I was going down there to get sober, but the day before I flew, the levee broke and I reached that breaking point where I was like, I can't continue living like this. I just can't.
Drinking
and cocaine.
Yeah, yeah.
So I was on a booze cruise DJing from Miami to Mexico before Australia. If you're going to make that realization anywhere, that's probably going to be the place. And there's a chapel on the boat, and through a series of conversations I'd had throughout the day, coming to terms with it, I went into the chapel and kind of got on my hands and knees and humbled myself and just asked for help. I was like, I finally accept and admit the fact that I have a problem.
Yeah.
I can't quit on my own. So I went to Australia as was planned, but I used that three-month period to get clean and sober, and I've got 82 days today.
Come on.
And the reason I bring it up, not just because I know you are sober, but when I knew this interview was going to take place,
82 days in a row,
82 straight days.
Wow.
Yeah,
it's a miracle, man.
It is a miracle, and the last 3 months have been a miracle. And as I was preparing to come home, I was really apprehensive because I'd had that time down there to figure everything out, right? The space, the perspective that living in a country the other side of the world gives you. Mm. Not just the weather and the beautiful outdoors that, you know, coastal walks and all of these opportunities, which maybe wouldn't have been there for me in London or Birmingham where I'm from. But it was just that time, that space, that perspective, everything, the healing was just, it was seismic. And then as I was preparing to come home, I was apprehensive about slipping back into old destructive habits as we go back to those places where we have associations with drinking and everything. It's tough, right? So I started listening to your two albums, Tenderness and Lighthouse, in the lead up to this chat that I knew was going to be taking place. And it just, the tone of both of those albums hit me in just the right way at just the right time, because the theme of both of those records, correct me if I'm wrong, is healing.
Yeah.
On a personal level, on a global level.
Yeah.
And the lyrics, the sounds, the mood, everything about those two albums, just like I heard them and, you know, felt them at exactly the moment when I needed to.
That's amazing.
And it really, as I was looking back on that 3 month journey and where I go next, like, I'll always have that association with those records now.
That's what the records are meant for, and I'm really pleased to hear that you that they hit you at that time. You know, congratulations. Are you doing AA or something?
Yeah, I'd never done it before, but as I got to Australia, I was like, get me to a meeting.
Great.
Yeah.
There's good AA in Birmingham.
Right.
I've been all over the world.
I'll have to get the information.
I don't know, but I know there's strong. I've gone to a couple groups there.
Right. So do you do it when you're on tour?
Through the hotel, you know, like where you get the, or you, there's an app now, of course, you know.
Of course, yeah.
Dublin, it's amazing. Like, because you know they some places, Dublin and Nashville, like their bottoms are like
real.
I mean, my bottom is pretty bad, but like you, like their bottoms are hilarious. You know,
mm-hmm. Like, well, Australia, dude, was that like Queensland and parts of the northern coast up there. This one guy's like, sure enough, you know, there's a high power up there and all that, but you better believe there's also a bastard down there and he's always trying to get you.
Love that.
Comedy is such a huge part of healing, not just in the 12-step program, but in life, right? That's why they say, you know, comedy is tragedy plus time. Like, we need that sense of the absurd and the hilarity sometimes to help us with the healing.
It's ridiculous, the things we done and do and done to ourselves. And you know, I have friends, you know, my friends my age are sober or dead, straight up.
Yeah,
there's no in between. There's we were like trying to think, some friends of mine at my age, we were trying to think, but no, there's no anybody that is still just kind of recreational using or, you know. So that's the deal. Turning 50, I wasn't thinking about, simply because my football team in Seattle was having the best season they've ever had. And then they got in the playoffs and they won their first playoff game. My birthday's coming up. I'm getting the text. Hey, the big 5-0. Like, yeah, fuck it. We're winning the playoffs. And we went to the next game, me and Jerry Cantrell, and like we went, and Susan, and we won, and we're going to the Super Bowl. Hey, 50. I'm like, I'm going to New York to the Super Bowl. Like,
that's a backdrop.
Such a backdrop. Yeah. Like, you don't understand. We've never been before. This is huge. And we go to New York. We go to the Super Bowl. We win the Super Bowl. The day that I turned 50, they're having a parade in Seattle for the team. So 50 kind of came and went. My team won the Super Bowl, best 50 ever. The age part didn't, you know, do anything to me. Like, oh, now what?
Yeah.
I do notice coming up on, so again, I'm getting the texts. I'm getting the stuff.
Are you getting them already?
Oh, I've been getting them for like a month.
New Year's Eve, like, right. January 1st, let's tech stuff.
I guess it is this year, you know. I don't know. I know Susan's just, I don't like her to plan a big thing, because she planned a big thing when I turned 40, and she stresses out for everything to be perfect. And she planned out like this part, it was Velvet Revolver days. Like, so it was the band guys and our friends and like a belly dancer and some sort of Turkish food. I don't know what the hell. And it was at a rehearsal place, and she set it all up. Tables and the whole thing. She got so stressed out, she threw up in the bathroom. I'm like,
oh no,
okay, no more.
You can't have that again, yeah.
You know, come on, baby. You're like, she just, like, her mom raised her this way. Like, everything's got to be perfect. It doesn't. It really doesn't.
Well, it already is. Let me ask you this, and I don't want to pry too much because it's your private life, but having spent time with Susan and read your book, you know, it seems like you two are just so hopelessly in love still.
Yeah.
And it's so awesome, like, you know, I follow you both on Instagram and watching the Guns reunion tour go all around the world, and you're experiencing it together, and you're just running around the world like kids. And I saw it that night I spent with you. I was like, man, these two really love each other still.
Yeah.
If anything, you love each other more as the years go by. And I just wanted to know how much of a component of your healing that connection was, and your companionship with Susan, and having someone who sees you and supports you and, you know, accepts your defects of character.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And loves you regardless.
Yes. So I did meet her, you know, 2 years in sobriety. I kind of did this thing where I really wasn't sure how to date. Yeah, the big,
that's exactly where I'm at.
Right now, you got the you got the L on your forehead. Like, hello, my name. You know, yeah. We got set up on Blind Date, and it worked. And what that's another story. But she, yeah, so meeting that, I guess it's the one, you know, as you hear it say, but it's not that easy. It's like, I met her, there was definitely like this, oh shit, knees buckling. And I, you know, I guess with her, it was the same way. Like,
and you know, don't you, when you have those feelings, it's pretty immediate.
We had talked on the phone. It was a blind date. So we had talked on the phone about 5 times, long conversations. And she sounds so familiar to me. So, but she picks me up at the airport, you know, back when you could come in and come to the gate, and she was dressed to the nines because we were going to dinner. And I was not dressed to the nines. And I see her.
You're in casual attire.
Yeah.
Casual being the key word.
Yes. I don't know what I was thinking, but I was coming back. I was on a Neurotic Outsiders tour, and I was coming back from Phoenix to Burbank, and there she was, this vision. I didn't know women dressed up like this, you know, like, and my knees buckled. And it wasn't just looks, because I'd talked to her a bunch. So I knew she was smart, and I knew she was funny. And so all those things together. And it's really just keeps blossoming. We went through tough times having kids, you know, the chaos of that, being in a rock band and having little kids. And, you know, we've been through a bunch of stuff, but we kept it, you know, we kept it cool. Not saying we haven't had a couple rough spots. Everybody does. But we got through it.
Mm.
We got through it with honesty and, you know, not that we cheat. No, nobody cheated on anybody. But, you know, it's just.
Well, I heard you did a podcast with Chris's daughter, Chris Cornell's daughter. Lovely, lovely conversation. And you spoke with her and that about how you relapsed at a certain point with pills.
Yeah.
And the shame you felt when you had to obviously confide in Susan, that's where you'd been. They're those moments where honesty is all you have to get you through, right?
Yeah, because it came out of nowhere and I was, I'm strung out. Holy fuck. I guess I was doing research.
Yeah, the research and development, yeah.
I was doing, and I'm out there, I'm here to tell you.
They use that phrase a lot in Australia. I heard that. Yeah.
You know, they say.
Yeah, they're doing a bit of research.
Yeah. They say it's a progressive disease. I never knew what that meant.
Mm.
So I went out to find out. So it means just because you stop now, you're using, your disease will still go. And so I got to this point, and I was like, I had to take. Took one of these pills one day for stress. Wrong thing. Wrong. I had them for something else. Panic attacks. And I took. There was a bunch of shit going on. And I went from one to, like, I'm not kidding you, 20 pills in 5 days to get that same. And that'll kill anybody else, but not us.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Not us. That's just like Tuesday.
Yep.
20 pills. You know what I mean? And so. Because it was that many, I got strung up very fast and had to. So I'm going cold turkey. Going cold turkey was like, but fucked. And I had to tell Susan. Okay, you know? She's like, what?
Because she'd only known sober you, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was the thing. Got through that. She was a champion with me on that. Like, okay. You know, she was just reading stuff. Like, this is part of the process of being sober, is to go out, you know. 10 and a half. I'm like, 10 and a half years into it? The fuck? I thought I was ironclad. She goes, nope. There's no ironclad in here. Whatever book she was reading. But 60, yeah. 60, Susan and I, she has been, fuck, we have a good time. And like, we're on a trip right now that we did for a movie, for a Trailer Park Boys movie.
Oh, you're in Bubbles' film, are you?
Yeah, yeah.
He did a tour with Billy Bob Thornton.
Yes.
And they played the Cavern Club, because my friend Ed is Ed Sellers' name. A shout out to Ed. He is Bubbles' booking agent. Okay. So I went up to Liverpool with him, saw that show, ended up doing a podcast with Billy Bob. He was fucking awesome.
Billy's but best.
That movie looks like it. So you and Susan are both in it? You had a little yesterday?
It was...
That's awesome.
Yeah. You know, Susan and I are hanging out with Ronnie Wood and his wife.
Uh-huh.
You know, like, it's like Eric Burton's there and Rick Nielsen from Cheap Trick and awesome. Billy, and Billy Bob.
Yeah, yeah.
Hanging with
what
Billy
a
Bob.
Cool motherfucker that dude.
Yes,
is.
He's great. And he's kind of the one who got me into this thing. And it was like a free trip to London for the two of us. Our kids are grown up. We got off tour. So we're like, fuck, let's go see Paul Cook. And you know, we went to Abbey Road, never been there before.
You know, the Hendrix house is just on this street,
we went,
right? You checked it out?
We went yesterday. Yeah. We do all, listen.
I can believe
we
it.
We do all the stuff. We have the walking map, and we'll just go. We went to the Wallace Collection yesterday, too. We do all the nerdy stuff.
You have a great life, man. And I know, as you say, it's not always sunshine and roses, but yeah. I see the humility and the appreciation and the gratitude that you have for the life that you have.
Yeah.
And it's so awesome, and you know, it couldn't happen to a better guy, man. Like, I want to touch on this. I hope you don't mind.
Go ahead.
I read Mark Lanegan's book, and that dude, what he had to say about you and what you did for him, beautiful and incredible. You know, you saved his life. You helped him get straight, and the level of pain that he'd endured. You know, obviously, you'd seen people around you before lose their lives to that disease, and to step in and help him in that way is so commendable and so wonderful.
Well, it was just, that's what you do, right? I mean, if you're sober and there's somebody trying to be sober and they come into your life, as Mark did in 1996, let's say, I was 2 years sober, right around the time I met Susan. And Mark was, you know, really trying to walk the walk, and we just started hanging out, really, and from the same, you know, hood.
Yeah.
Really. So we had all this stuff, in our sports teams and all that shit, you know. He's funny. He's a funny fucker.
A wicked man with a wicked sense of humor.
Amazing. So, yeah, you know Mark.
I had him on the show a few months before he passed, yeah. Beautiful man.
Yes.
Well, I don't know whether beautiful would be the word, but a true... unique individual, and you know, a rich talent, and just, you know, a fascinating, sharp, brilliant man.
Yeah. He got a little lost in the woods there at the end, but close with Mark. And Mark, I swear, like, I played on sometime around then. He was trying to put Field Songs together,
right?
The record Field Songs. And I played it. I'm like, the song needed drums on it. And so, you want me to play drums? I got, you know, great. You know, I played a few things on that record. But it was when I really, like, got into inside of his songwriting. Like, three chords, and, like, nobody can fill up a room like his voice can. You know, I'm not. But that really influenced me. I'm like, one day I want to do this. And then I started playing more. Played on a few Mark records,
right?
Over the years,
yeah,
and played a couple gigs. You know, we were just friends, right? So, like, if he needed something, played a couple gigs with him for this or the other thing, and really got the feel of Mark musically. I knew him in all other kind of slants of life, but being inside his musical world is a real treat, you know. For me, who's like a student of this shit, you know, I I mean, I watch Slash play guitar every night because he plays a different theme and a solo every night, or he'll play different chords. I'm always just looking at his chording, like, what the fuck is that? And I'll talk to him about it. Like, you went to a whole different thing. It's like,
yeah. Is he aware? Is he conscious of it?
No, he's not.
Wow.
He's beautiful.
He's just in that moment.
Gone. He's gone. If you see a Guns N' Roses show, he's
gone. I just saw you at Hyde Park the time you just played with Pretenders in the Darkness.
Yeah.
And man, like, just very quickly, to still go out there for 3.5 hours.
Yeah.
And like, you know, you've obviously, the Stones have led the way, right? And they've shown us that you can do it. There's no stopping you till you're in a box.
Yeah.
And the way you guys go for that long, and the set lists are just that sprawling and epic. And it's one of the best shows I saw last year. It's incredible.
Oh, good.
And it was my first time seeing it with the three of you back together doing
it. Oh, okay.
And I was sober that day, so I got to really see it.
Oh, amazing.
And remember it.
Yeah, amazing.
It was epic. But yeah, sorry, so you watch people like Slash and
I do,
Mark
I watch, I do, I observe. That's how I learn. I didn't go to music school, you know, I don't.
You're completely self-taught.
Yes, and I'm an observationalist. That's how I learn, and I'm an observationalist in life in general. You know, I watch people, I go to small towns, I do weird shit, you know, on tour, like, just to like see, I'm interested in people and cultures.
You and me both.
You know, I don't like to insert myself. I'll go to a coffee shop in a town we're not playing at and just hang out. You know,
that's the best thing about touring, man. Other than the shows, of course. I tour a lot as a DJ, and I do a lot of live Q&A, spoken word event tours. And for me, it's all about the travel and the experience of living in other people's cultures for a day or two and really immersing yourself.
Yeah.
And experiencing it.
So I've kind of mixed that, all of this stuff, and trying to be, I do read a lot of history. I've been, you know, my armchair expert in history. Armchair.
Well, that's the best thing about getting straight, right, is you have a lot of time on your hands to use in a lot more productive ways.
Yeah.
And reading is what could be more nourishing than learning about, you know, ancient worlds. And
I love it, you know. And I go off into different tangents for a while. But knowing the history of some places I go, I try to do that. And then kind of trying to put it all together. And it really informs that with like Mark Lanegan's style of simplicity and using beautiful chords and trying to, you know, craft a beautiful melody to it and really cut your words, you know.
I heard you mention Cormac McCarthy in a couple of interviews and his very stripped back prose as, you know, being an influence. And yeah, he's
big influence. Not that I copy a line of his at all, but you know,
it's the attitude and the
Beatles
approach.
You're going to write better songs.
Of course.
And Cormac, there's a few authors that I will go. I mean, I read Cormac when I was writing my first book too, just to have a benchmark. You know,
you read Lanegan's book, I presume.
Yes.
What an exceptionally well-written book that was as well.
Yeah.
Yours is brilliant. Yours is amazing. I really enjoyed the presentation of you kind of jump back and forth between the Seattle and the LA scenes in the first third of the book and interweave those.
Right.
You know, I noticed because I studied English at university, so I'm a structuralist and I'm always paying attention to that.
I am too. Yeah. No, that was the interesting bit of writing that first book was I'd written so many stories. Now, how do you put this together? And of course, I got a book deal and they wanted to edit the book. I was like, absolutely not. I had the rights. I don't know who you are. Mm. You know?
And assumedly, you've been writing columns and, you know, doing tons of writing for years.
Tons of writing.
That.
Yeah. So I knew, and I had an editor at Playboy who I really like. He's like a professor.
Was he the dude that worked with Hunter?
Tim Moore.
I bet he had some stories.
Oh my God, it's great. So he did this kind of thing with Hunter. Like, so I would start calling Tim. I'm like, I'd send him all my stuff. He'd be like, document 8, paragraph 3. What did that look like? What did that feel like? I'm like, I don't know. It says it there. No, I can't guess at what that. So he had me add some more things. And then we had all the documents out. I'm like, okay, how do we do this? You know, the book company wants to start in the hospital bed. And I'm like, How many books start that way? A lot.
Yeah. You know? Dude, the way you start, it already lets you know that there's a happy ending, you know?
Right.
And you're like, wow, this guy's got a family and he's got a loving, wholesome, beautiful life.
Yeah.
But I already know that this other stuff went down, so how did he get here?
Yeah.
And I love the way you open the book with Grace's 13th birthday.
The party happened while I was writing the book. And I'm like, after that whole realization of that party and the kissing, and mm-hmm. I was thinking back to what I was doing at that age, and I'm like, oh, fuck, they're just kissing. I'm like, I have the intro to my book. Yeah.
Oh, so. Dude, it draws you in immediately because you're like, wow, this guy's like, he's a regular dude. He's a dad with dad worries. Instantly humanizes you.
Well, it's just, you know. Yeah, two girls. Yeah,
I would love to do one of these with Susan because she put out a book on the publishing house that put out two of mine. So I've written two books with Rare Bird, and I know that she did one with them. So yeah. I need to get that book from Tyson and read it.
Oh yeah, and then have a chat with her. She wrote a novel. Like I was like, you're gonna write a novel? She goes, I just had this idea rattling in my head, and then 9 years, she just fucking went at it. And I'm like, I write stuff that I experience or some things I know about, but to make up a story, and
it's a whole other skill.
Yeah. And she did it. She just, like, once she started, she's very stubborn. Like, I'm not giving up. Nobody gave her a book deal. Like, I'm not giving up. She would get suggestions. She would fix stuff. And she did a great job. She's an incredible chick. It's great. Back to being 60. So, I don't know. I'm getting the text. I think Susan's planning this. I'm like, I have to tell her, honey, do not. Please. You know what happened when I said it stresses me out. You know? And like, let's go to dinner with my brother and his wife. And Grace will be in town. Let's just go back to LA. Small. So, but I got like a weird text from Slash. Hey, so I'm gonna South America, and I won't be able to be back. I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about. Shit. So
Slash has let the cat out of the bag.
Yeah, there
again.
Was some weird text, and I've not told Susan. Yeah, that I got it. So I don't know what's going on. I'm just grateful. I don't care what age I'm at. You know, I really don't.
Well, rock and roll, right, despite the pitfalls of it, despite the excess and the self-destructive behavior and the hard physical endurance of touring and all of those things, just look at Mick Jagger. Rock and roll is evidently, like, been proved to keep you young, to keep you connected to the experience of just being alive and to keep you excited about being alive. And you look at the people who do make the changes that are necessary, i.e. cut out certain extracurricular activities. Being in a rock and roll band and playing rock and roll keeps you young at heart. Look at Mick Jagger. The dude's, 82?
No, I do look at him. As I'm an observationalist, and I do look at the Stones. I look at Mick. And I was with, Ronnie Wood the other day. Not the name drop, but I was with Ronnie Wood. And I was with Rick Nielsen from Cheap Trick, and they're all older than me, Eric Burton from The Animals. I'm like, well, these are interesting guys, 20 years older than me at least.
Eric Burton, certainly. Rick and Ronnie, definitely 10, 15. Yeah.
How old's Ronnie?
Ronnie's a little bit younger, isn't he? He's like the young buck in the Stones. Right. He's got to be like mid-70s.
Mid-70s, yeah. Right, okay. Right, because I'll be 60, right, yeah. That's the only, like, the age gets weird when you're like, oh, yeah, somebody's in their mid-70s, only 15 years older than me. Oh, wow, okay.
Yeah.
But whatever. But, yeah, watching those guys and just how, full of life, it's like, great. I always like hanging out with the older guys because they're not the older of, and I think like a lot, like, I'm not the 60 years old that my dad was.
Well, Mick Jagger's generation, the 60s kids, Roger Daltrey, Paul McCartney, those guys, they were the first generation that actually had youth culture as part of their tapestry, right? Because before then, you were, if you were 30, you were old.
Right.
Before that rock and roll explosion, right?
Right.
It was just like, you're a teenager and then you're an old man and there's like no adolescence.
Yes. Yeah.
And then they changed all that and showed you that actually you can be, you know, more of a free-spirited young individual into adulthood.
Right.
And you don't need to just get the suit and the tie on and comb your hair and go work in the bank or whatever it is.
Right.
There's other opportunities out there.
Yeah.
Like being in a traveling circus such as rock and roll.
Yeah.
And in mentioning the Stones, obviously the influence is there in abundance on the two most recent solo records. I think those albums, I like the Loaded stuff. I do like the Loaded stuff. But I think these two records is where you belong as a songwriter. I think it's the best stuff you've ever written. I think the earworms, the summit, like chip away. There's certain songs that are just like, oh my God, this is as catchy as like Wild Horses. It's just like straight in there. And it just suits your vocal style so well.
Right. Yeah.
And it's something I think that, I guess it's always been in there, that idea of, because it's a punk rock album, well, both of them are to me, although, you know, sonically they aren't quite what some people would consider punk. There's that Johnny Thunders kind of attitude there, but it's just that idea, I think, of making the world a better place, which is what punk's all about, right?
I 100% agree that they're punk records, and like Sue and I have a radio show, and it's just really like this is the thing.
Three chords and the truth,
three
right?
Three chords and the truth.
That's all you need.
And that's punk rock to me. That was the Clash when I saw them in 79 that changed my whole thing. I'm like, we're in this thing together, you and us. You know, like, wow, yes. And I'd just seen Led Zeppelin 2 years before in the Kingdom. I loved Led Zeppelin, but they were so far away and they flew off in their Led Zeppelin plane. And
that's it.
That's how you want
with it. With Led Zeppelin actually on the plane. Like the
yes.
words.
Yeah, right. And then you got the Clash, who are just as extravagant and exotic to me as Led Zeppelin, but they're, you know, there was a thing that happened. Paul Simonon came out with an axe to chop down the little fence between them, the stage and the audience. There was only like 150 of us here, there. And they're like, we'll chop down this gate, this fence, because there should be nothing between us. Oh, fuck. Fuck. And it just, this light came on, and I'm like, oh, this is what rock and roll is. I get this. This is so Three Chords and the Truth is a, like punk rock to me. I think the way you attack music, this last two records, I finally let my acoustic guitar sitting up against me inform me where to sing, you know, like that resonation, like, oh, just. The guitar has been trying to tell you where to sing for years, but you go, you know, you'll go up a register, nah, you know, you don't.
Because volume's better, right?
Yeah, volume. And then, you know, stay down where you're singing it right now when you're writing the song. Stay here. So I think it let my voice grow a little bit and mature into a place where I'm confident.
Mm, it sounds it. It sounds like
relaxed.
Your voice.
Yeah.
You know, like stand-up comedians talk a lot about finding their voice, right?
Mm.
You can have good material, good observations, a good joke, but can you deliver it in a way that the full package is there?
Mm.
Where it's like, this person has a perspective. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And there's a fully like built persona there ready to go. And that takes time and it takes experience and it takes development. And it's so great, like talking about age and stages of life and all of this, like to still be feeling like you're evolving and still
yes.
improving
yes.
and still, and actually I think making the best stuff of your life is amazing.
Thanks, I appreciate
and I genuinely
that.
Mean that. Like, and you know, I have a certain, as I mentioned at the start, I'll always have a certain emotional connection to those albums because of where I was
right.
in my life when I heard them. But I would have still enjoyed them anyway because I love 70s Stones
right.
and I love Johnny Thunders and the Heartbreakers
right.
and, you know, it's a familiar musical terrain to me, and I understand the reference points and where you're coming from, so
right.
I could immediately get on board. But I just think the way it's presented with the melodies, with the lyrics, with the subject matter, it's vital stuff as rock and roll should be.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Do you still believe in the healing power of music? Do you still believe in this fractured, crazy world that songs and artists and songwriters can...
I mean, it's maybe it's a romantic vision, but yes. And I think that's what keeps me writing. You know, I'm trying to find that key, that one lyric that will tie us all together. You know, you have these hopes that this one song will, you know, get a bunch of people to breathe easier, you know, have some vision.
Well, it worked. Yeah. You got one case here.
If it's one at a time, whatever. But I keep striving for that. I'm communicating with you because I know you, you know, and you obviously identified with, you know, hey, okay, got it. He's been there, done that. And it's really a nice time. I've been writing so many lyrics, so many songs on my iPad right now. I have 85 songs that I've yet to record. I have 40 done at my studio. So there's a lot of material. I don't know what to do with it all.
Is it just because it's coming out of you that
it's
fast?
It's coming out. It's coming out. Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So I'll probably put another record out this fall.
Do you have different bands each time, or do you do it Prince style and play everything? How do you?
Lighthouse, a lot of me, because it was COVID. I got Jamie Shooter's drummer, who played on Tenderness, to come up. A few different times he played on a bunch of my stuff. Again, I recorded like 60 songs. So it was Jamie, myself, this guitar player, Tim DiGiulio in LA, in Seattle. He's all of our favorite guitar player. Mike McCready's favorite guitar player. Grew up with Mike. Had him play. He's like this really cool Mick Ronson sort of, you know, 70s bassist type of player. And that's how he plays. And it's like, beautiful on my songs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is.
So that was it, really. It was Tim and myself and Jamie.
And Jerry for the one tune.
Jerry, yeah.
I love that interview you guys did together. I guess you filmed it when you were on tour. You got a room and, you know, the friendship. And you two, like, how many people in that scene at that time made it out? You know, it's not many. And so to have lived those experiences and survive those experiences together and to be where you both are. I've had Jerry on the show as well. Lovely guy, fucking, you know, witty as hell.
Yeah.
And incredible, incredible guitar player and songwriter.
Yes.
And,
his
last solo album was awesome
the
as
new
well.
One's really good, too. I'm playing on 5 songs. So I think I go in on Tuesday and do the 5 songs. So I'm stoked about that.
You should do a joint tour, you and him. That's the tour.
I'm thinking about doing a joint record.
Fuck yeah.
At some point.
Well, then the tour is a natural extension of that, isn't it?
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah, like we made a video for that song, Just Don't Know. So we were hanging out at this with acoustic guitars, and we wrote like 4 songs.
Just in that one afternoon.
Like 2 or 3 hours. My manager's there. He's like, hey, Brian, you should probably record this. So we have it. But I really appreciate guys like Jerry being... It's really nice for me to, you know, we're basically exactly the same age, been through basically the exact shit,
mm-hmm.
You know. I get to see him write songs and fight his guitar for whatever lead, and it's so great. I love watching. He tortures himself to get to this place. God damn it. You know? Fuck.
You talk about that in the interview. Yeah, you basically, he like curses and Fs and blinds his way to the end result.
Yeah, and that's his process. Like, don't take it personally. Yeah. Anybody around. That's him getting to his... I totally understand it.
Yeah.
And I love...
That's like the opposite of Slash, is it? Are they very different recording artists in that way?
I mean, Slash is just... they're both beautiful players. Slash will really... he might do some stuff in preparation more, like figure out a melody for a solo or something, and come in and kind of then finish it. And he's very quiet, you know, when he does his...
I noticed that. I've only interviewed him once, but just a really introvert, cool as hell, smart and sharp and funny.
Oh, yeah.
Very witty when he does open his mouth, but he's not wasting words, is he? Someone like that.
No. He's really, I mean, just all about... Both those guys are all about the guitar, but Slash just, I mean, literally can't not have a guitar in his hand. Hotel room, wherever.
It's like an extension of him.
Yeah. We go to the airport, he's got his guitar, you know.
You'll appreciate this. Like when I did interview him, I said, you know, because he used to be a pro BMXer, or was nearly a pro BMXer. And I said, how do you think your life would have panned out differently had you gone down that road? And without missing a beat, he just goes, well, I guess I'd be wearing a helmet instead of a top hat.
That's great. That's great. I've never heard him been asked that question. That's he's a smart guy and he's funny.
Did you remain fairly in contact over those intermittent years or
Slash and I?
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, and then we formed Velvet Revolver.
Of course.
You know, some 7 years later. We started kind of playing together in 2001, kind of doing this and that and the other. But then actually, like, let's put together a thing. Let's look for a singer. That started about 2002, I suppose. So I got sober in 94. He didn't for a while, so he was kind of out there.
Doing the research.
He was out there still doing it. You know, I was a little worried at times. You know, once I got my feet underneath me pretty good, I, you know, like, okay, how's my buddy? He's gonna make it through this thing. There was people falling off at that point, so I was hoping he wouldn't be one of them, but you know, there's only so much you can do. You can't be the savior of people. They gotta be their own saviors.
Yeah. Well, I did one of these at Kevin Kerslake's house, where you obviously filmed the Fall to Pieces, or parts of the Fall to Pieces video, upstairs in the bedroom. Mm. And, you know, Kevin had known Scott since the 90s. I guess he'd done tons of videos with him through Stone Temple Pilots and all of that era through to the Velvet Revolver stuff. And, like, yeah, I guess that's someone who just couldn't quite work his way out of the weeds, could he?
No. And we did a lot, you know, for Scott. You're talking about Scott Weiland now. You know, he had kids, and And this is when, you know, our kids were about the same age. And Susan knew his wife, and it's like, Scott, you got to be here for the kids. And he asked for help. And when that happens, you know, like, okay. And the help and the band all kind of start at the same time. First, you know, he really got his life back, got his family back, got everything. He was just a wonderful, sober guy, kind of leader of the pack, you know. Hey, what do you want to do? You know, he was so happy to be sober. And second record, when we started recording, there was, you know, you could see, you know, when you see somebody who's got to be sober, I mean, if people are listening to this interview right now, like, sober to us means you can't do, no, I cannot have a glass of wine with dinner. No. Don't you miss it? No, I don't. You know, I could tell you why I don't miss it. But if you're an alcoholic and drug addict like me, the consequence of perhaps having a glass of wine after dinner or with dinner are you're going to go to the next bar after that. You're going to clear that out. You're going to get some cocaine. You're going to go down to the shop and buy a bunch of booze. That party's not going to end until 3 days later, and can't just have one. So Scott, you know, came into second recording sessions and he had a glass of wine, red wine. It's like, Scott, what are you doing? Oh, drinking was never my problem. I think the conversation was had right then and there. Like, that's going to lead one place. And you know it. You know, he's no dum-dum. He'd seen a lot of people go, no. And then we just kind of watched the, you know, him fall apart, and that band ended. It was really hard to watch, and then he just kind of spun off. And I knew as soon as, like, I saw the glass of wine, and
how that was going to play out.
You knew it. You knew, okay, it's a matter of time, because of his preceding ins and outs. Like, this was going to maybe be the time. So, very sad. Great guy.
An incredible talent.
Incredible talent.
The thing, especially about that first album, was he was able, with individual songs, to channel different artists at different times. You know, there was bits of like, Bowie was obviously in there. Mm-hmm. Iggy was definitely in mm-hmm. there. There was a third singer that Kevin mentioned, who was his other big influence. I can't quite remember the one it was. But he would literally, you know, he would put on these different kind of masks for different yeah. songs and even different moments within songs, wouldn't he? But it was still him.
Yeah.
And it's still original and exciting. And I'll never forget that fucking Slither video was one of the last, I think, great, dangerous music video statements. It was like, here's these guys, everybody's written them off, they're fucking back. And not only are they back, but it's like, you know, this, it's the, conceptually, obviously, I think Kevin had spoken to me about how with a video like November Rain with Slash with the fucking church and the solo outside, he's like, where do you go after a band has done that? They've been deified to the right. point of excess. So let's go underground. Let's go in the opposite direction.
Amazing.
Let's tunnel down into the cavern. Let's make it this primal animalistic thing. And you've got Scott with the silver fucking pants. Like, and you're in Paris, right? In the catacombs of Paris? Or no, did you have to recreate the catacombs in LA because you couldn't leave the country or something?
Something like that. Yeah, exactly right. So it was just like an underground parking garage or something. And then they went and filmed some stuff in the Prague catacombs.
An incredible video, man. Incredible band. That first record especially.
Yeah.
So badass.
Yeah. We were ready. We were, you know, yeah, like you said, people were like, ah, these old guys, you know. Well, we got some songs that we think are pretty fucking cool, you know. And that was a great first record. The whole campaign, the tours and stuff, cool. But Slash and I, yes, we stayed in touch for sure.
And what about you and Axel? Was that a friendship that remained?
I mean,
it seems like you're kind of the mediator. Is that safe to say? Like,
yeah, unfortunately, no. It kind of got ripped apart, and you know, I like to raise my hand up if I've had something to do with it. You know, I realized when I was writing my first book, oh yeah, it wasn't everybody else's fault all the time, was it?
One of the good things about getting sober, isn't it? Good and bad. You know.
But when you write a book, you know, even in sobriety, I was telling myself these stories. As a human being, you're want to do. You're going to tell some stories about yourself, and that motherfucker over there did this thing, and you know, telling you that motherfucker. You know, not talking about Axel, but
of course,
ex person, right? So yeah, I could have done a better job at staying in touch with Axel, and I didn't. You know, I kind of. We had our first daughter, 97. I was suddenly in the mode, and I went back to school, and we had our second daughter, and I was in mode. I'm not making excuses. Sort of am.
Well, you're focusing on your recovery and being a dad, right?
I was, but I could have included him, and I didn't. You know, and but we rekindled in London, of all places.
That hotel moment was the moment, was it?
Yeah, yeah.
Where you're in adjacent doors just by chance.
Yeah, well, I think the hotel manager's place I'd stayed before a bunch of times, he had put me in the, he thought I was coming to play with, actually, I'm going to put him next to me.
Because Guns had a gig in town.
I had no idea. I wasn't here for that.
Yeah, yeah.
And, so I thought, well, this is time. This is meant to be. Of all the gin joints and, you know, and all the cities in the world, we're in rooms next to each other. So I just went over and knocked on the door, and that began us rekindling. And we had a really great time. We took a boat up to his gig. You know, it was really nice.
The Thames water ferry. Yeah, like the water taxi.
Yeah, we took a private one.
Amazing.
You know, instead of driving up.
Oh, yeah, I guess so. If it's Axl Rose and Duff McKagan getting on a public one, people might be like...
Right, but they might have been going to the gig, you know. But what a nice way to get to that venue.
Yeah.
Because the traffic up there can be a bear, you know. But we just, you know, had a really nice... He's like, do you want to play? Like, if man, sure. Like, okay. And I played a couple songs, and people there at the O2 just kind of freaked out. And, you know, we left it at that. And but that rekindled our relationship, whatever year that was, 2011?
Mm. Well, I think the last time I saw you in person, because my ex-partner is Olivia from ITB, or used to work at ITB, so she used to book a bunch of projects for you. And we came to say hello at the AC/DC show in London when Axel was singing. Mm-hmm. You were there with Nicolas Cage, I think, or he was there.
Me and Slash and our ladies came.
Right.
To surprise Axel. But Nicolas Cage was there.
He was there, loving life. And
he came up to me and said, I love your book, man. I'm like, Nicolas Cage is kind of larger than life.
Yeah.
You know, like, oh, thank you, bud. Man, no, I really, really loved it. He's very, you know,
I didn't get to meet him. I saw him. But what do you say to someone like that? You know, you don't be like, hi, I'm Matt. Like,
he's very like, okay.
Animated.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, well, thank you, Nicolas Cage.
Yeah.
You know, that's made my night.
How important do you think Axl's time in AC/DC was to the healing of Guns N' Roses? I guess in terms of him stepping outside of that world as maybe a fan again, you know, with his favorite group, doing all these amazing Bon Scott songs, in a band arguably one of the few bigger than Guns. Like, do you think that was a key part of the redemption of the band? And
I think it gave
rediscovering the love and all of that.
He became, you know, we went out and did that first stadium tour. He broke, you know, his foot the first, and he overcame it. He got the, you know, the Grohl brought this
throne.
So it was a kindling with Grohl, because there was some old Nirvana stuff, and that kind of put that all to bed, you know.
I didn't even make that connection, of course.
With Dave, and he, and you know, Axl was very like touched by the whole thing, and he, you know, he, man, like, to be able to sing that stuff sitting down, dude, it's not like, I observe every vowel, every note he sings, just because he's a fucking master. Where he breathes, where he pushes from, it's, you know, angle of his head, angle of, he's a real amazing singer to go to school on, you know, and I get to do it nightly.
Like, okay, for hours.
That's where I would breathe for that vowel sound right there. But, you know, so he was kind of like, from that, we played Coachella. He was kind of the hero, you know, like, and then getting that of that year. I think he was like the hero of that year. And then getting the AC/DC thing. Me and Slash have gone off and played with all kinds of people over the years. You name it, you know. We've done it. Almost. He's never done it.
I didn't even think about that either.
No. Nope.
He's never stepped outside the guns.
He sang on a Steve Jones record back in Fire and Gasoline on that song. He sang on a Don Henley song. Couple things, but like he got up, like back then he got up with the Tom Petty and did a Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in one song, but and then it just kind of ended throughout all that time and didn't get up on stage with somebody and do something, you know. And that AC/DC thing really was like his favorite band. He went and tried out. I'm gonna try it. I hope they
like, did he tell you that? Obviously,
yes. I'm like, you're not gonna need to try out. I wouldn't worry about it. Oh, I'm so nervous. It was really great. Like, we knew, me and Slash, you're going to get the gig. And it was so good for him, man. He still had the cast on, you know. I think he had to play the first couple in the chair, and then he got his walking boot. But then Slash and I came to, like, surprise him. We came in through you can come into Heathrow. You got to pay some money. But we came around to the side thing, so we weren't in the airport, so nobody knew we were here.
Amazing.
To really like
surprise him. To really surprise him, yeah.
And support him in this thing. Because we knew he hadn't been able to do this thing, play with other people. So I think it did really help. I think he saw how that organization was run too. Like, it's like, we can go on in time and all that stuff. Because, you know, they'll go on, like, if I'm ready or not. They're going to go on. So, but he was really already, you know, like, like for me, he's done like this amazing, he's a great leader in a band situation. It's a lot of levity. Takes it very seriously, warms up for an hour and a half, warms down for an hour and a half. And we go on in time and we play forever. You know, if there's a curfew at 11, we'll hit that curfew. And so that means we're going to go on at 7:30. Or else we don't get to play all the songs. So if we're going on at 8, we're playing less time, you know. So he doesn't want to do that. So, I've enjoyed watching his, his triumph over the last 8 years.
And healing for all of you.
Yeah, yeah.
Going back to that word, right?
Absolutely.
And doing it all sober.
Yeah.
All being there, present.
Yeah. Grown men, sober guys, having fun doing it. This last tour, the one you saw, Hyde Park.
I noticed that. Axel was like all smiles all night. I'd never seen that version of him on stage before.
Yeah,
Wow, he's really, really enjoying it.
And it's not a put on. I mean,
no.
We're not a put
on. You can't fake that.
Yeah. And it's been really, really quite wonderful, you know. It's been wonderful.
You did it, man. And what's cool is, like, for all the mudslinging and criticism, he kept the fucking the fire alive, didn't he, all that time? He was the one keeping the name alive and pushing forward and not giving up on it. Not that you guys gave up, but, you know, that's the way life happens.
Yeah.
But to come back around altogether.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Incredible. Not many get to do it.
No, it's a crazy story. One we know, you know. Only us really know the whole story, and that's the way it shall remain, I'm sure. But it's just, you know, you have young men who formed a band back in 1985 and wrote these songs. Like, we figured out how to write songs, and we did it together. Like, this is the group that can do that. There was one guy missing that we wouldn't have. This song wouldn't have Brownstone, wouldn't have, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
You name a song.
Well, it was the amalgamation of style, wasn't it?
From
the P-Funk and from the rock and roll and the punk and the metal and all the different personal tastes that each of the five members had and the coming together. Let me ask you, in your book, you talk about the first time you play, it's immediate for all of you. You're all just like, this is it. Mm-hmm. When you and Axl and Slash get back together for the first time to jam, to rehearse, what's that moment like? Electric.
Oh, right. Yeah. When we all, yeah, it was heavy. Because it is that each guy has grown as a musician too, gotten better and more sort of sure of themselves. And it was probably a little nerve-wracking before the three of us got together. Me and Slash were playing with the Frank and those guys, getting everything, you know, going as a band for a couple weeks or whatever it was. And then it's time for him to come in. If he came in right away, it would be a waste of time. So when he came in, it was heavy, and then it wasn't, you know? And then it wasn't. And then it was like, okay, what else you want to run? You know, just ran everything, you know. But so it's been a real cool time. And we're taking a little time off right now. We have toured the world, I don't know, 8 times since 2016. So we're giving the world a little break. and my legs.
Well, that was the thing, right? Back in the 90s, is you just fucking ran that thing to the point. Like, and that was the industry then. Mm-hmm. You know, conversations about physical and mental health were not commonplace.
Right.
It was, let's get these boys out on the road, selling tickets, earning money. You know, and there was no option of a break between records, between tours.
Right.
Whereas now, because you're a lot more, I imagine, in control of the business,
yes,
and your own lives,
yes,
you can be like, right, let's hit pause.
Yeah.
Nothing is going to change if we go away for 6 months. If anything, demand is going to increase, and yes, we can come back when we're rested.
Yes.
Pick and choose.
Yes.
Go do solo records. Fucking Slash can do his stuff with Miles.
Yeah.
Incredible.
Slash is in Sao Paulo or something today. You know, he just went like, okay, bud, you know. My legs are still healing myself. He's an animal, Slash is. Yeah, it's been this kind of aftermath of this tour has been really nice. Like ending my record was supposed to come out the day after, 3 days after we got done with touring, but we extended our tour. So my record came out while I'm on the road with Guns, which was a little weird. So like my record release day, it's kind of like your birthday.
Yeah.
You know? But I was in like this Courtyard by Marriott in Boise, Idaho.
Classic. Very salubrious.
Yes. Yeah. I got a cake because the joke is, I wrote about in my book, we got a sheet cake when after. So I get a cake. My manager sends me a cake. My wife sends me flowers. I'm in this courtyard by Marriott. You know, I got a view of like a building next door. And good gym at this hotel, though. Don't sleep on Boise. It's okay.
Yeah, right.
However, there I was with a cake and flowers. And now, what do I do now? I did all the interviews, you know. Okay, well, I messaged the crew because we're staying in the same hotel. Anybody want some cake?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's 10 in the morning. I don't want any cake. All right. Go to the gym. So it was kind of, you know, like, all right. Well, it felt good that my record was out. And, got really nice reviews, and like Brian was sending me stuff. I don't really like to read the reviews, so he sent me a couple things that were very, you know, just nice. And
I think reviews are almost pointless in this day and age.
Right.
When you couldn't hear the record, then somebody else's respected, trusted opinion perhaps was an important thing then. But now it's like, it's just one guy's opinion. I'll listen to it myself and make up my own mind.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And it's hard when you read words that are negative about something you've labored over. It's hard.
Right. Right. Yeah. And I just won't put myself. I mean, this is a thing that started a long time ago. Like, there was that song we wrote that on Use Your Illusions. Get in the ring.
Get in the ring.
Why do you look at me when you hate me? Why do you write about me when you don't like us already? Mm. You know? So that was an experience that we'd had. It's like, okay, why am I reading this shit? I know what we're doing every night, you know? I see the reaction. I don't need to read some dude who, I don't know, maybe his girlfriend likes our band too much or something.
There's always there's always a reason, isn't there? There's always an incentive or an angle. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, the objective truth is a very slippery thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Especially in the world of music journalism. But I got to say, dude, I adore it. I adore both albums, and I will always cherish them.
Thank you.
And I'll go back to them repeatedly.
There's more.
There's plenty more by the sounds of it. Before I let you go, Iggy Pop.
Yeah.
Now, that is the guy. That Steve Jones, I know he's your guy. You played with him. You've done that. I know you've been playing with Iggy. Is it what's the name of the band that you have with Iggy and Chad? And
the Losers.
The Losers.
Yeah.
You know, do you still revert somewhere in your head? You're a peer. You're an equal of Iggy at this stage.
I'm like 14.
But do you still go, oh my God, I'm fucking playing with Iggy? Do you still get that buzz?
Oh, yeah. I mean, and I will, you know, I get to write some music for that record. Slash and I played on Brick by Brick back in 1990. And that was fucking radical, you know.
And how old are you then? You're still like a kid then, right?
I'd made it, you know. Yeah, I was 26. Like, you know, calling all my friends in Seattle, I fucking made it, man. You know, all the gun stuff aside.
Mm-hmm. This is it.
This is it. And they all knew it. Like, oh, fucking Iggy. So, you know, flash forward a bunch of years. And to do this thing again, I've done some records with Andrew Watt and Chad. We've done a couple Aussie records. We're like this little triumvirate. We'll write and record music. We did 9 Aussie songs, wrote them and recorded them in 4 days.
For the most recent Aussie record or the one before?
The one before. So we did 9 of those songs. The recent one, not sure how many songs we did on it. 5? You know?
He's still killing.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Under the graveyard, man.
Ooh. Yeah. But then Iggy and the same 3 guys, me and Chad and Watt, to do this thing. And then Iggy asked us to be his band. Can you guys do some shows with me?
It's a good Iggy impression as well. That.
Yeah. you guys can pick out the set list. Oh, wow. He wants to play record songs from the new record, but the rest of it, you know, like, okay, we can do that. And I woodshed it. You know, I know those songs, like the back of my hand, but I wanted to be, you know, his best band he'd ever had. And how many bands yet? So me and Chad were like, we have to be the best rhythm section he's ever had. We're going to do it. And then putting that band together, we got Jamie from The Kills and Matt, who plays keys in The Stones, and Watt, and going in and rehearse. And then, you know, Iggy coming in, and he's really kind of like James Brown. Like, how many bands has he ran, you know?
I just saw him at a football ground, Crystal Palace maybe. Dog Day Afternoon was the name of the day.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
it's like,
yeah.
Blondie, amazing lineup.
Yes, right.
And the band he had that day, with all the horns, and they were doing all the Funhouse era stuff. He's right. A conductor. He really is.
I think that was the night after we did...
It was.
Hyde Park.
It was.
Night before or night after.
It was at the same weekend, for mm-hmm. sure. Yeah, I did both back-to-back.
Yeah.
It was a good weekend for music in London,
cool.
That was.
Cool.
And he closes your record with the Lighthouse Reprise. You get to hear, you know, he's I know him and Tom Waits are close, and he has that similar sound now.
Yeah.
Like, they both come from a very, like, when it comes to spoken word stuff.
It rattles a room. So we
it's
got...
like the Lanigan thing, isn't it, as well? It's another one. Like, there aren't many voices like that.
We got, so he gave us like 5 different versions. Quicker one, this one, and the one but you get Iggy just in our speaker, in my studio, you have his voice, and the speakers are rattling, you know, his voice is so big, and it was so sweet of him to do that. He liked the lyrics to that song. Let me do something, you know, do a spoken word thing, and we put the music kind of behind it. We put, you know, little pieces of the music behind it, and it was just this beautiful thing. And so we'll be like, okay, we'll do a classic, like old school reprise at the end, you know, let some time expire, and then that song comes on, you know. So real treat, you know, having Jerry on the record too, and Slash, this old song we did in 96 that I got these masters back, and we started listening to stuff, and the idea of hope, the lyric in that song was why we put it on this record. Wasn't really to have, you know, to track people because Slash is on the song. It was a song Slash and I and Abe Laborio did in 1996. And but the lyrical matter ties in the rest of the record, I think.
Healing and hope is what I got from it.
Yeah.
And just congratulations, man.
Thank you.
Thank you for this exchange.
Great. And you know, I'm going to hit the gym.
God bless you and happy birthday for next week, man. And just thanks for all the music and thank you for the conversation today.
Cheers. Congratulations on 82 days.
Thank you, brother.
It's amazing.
Cheers, Duff.
Yeah. Cheers.
My very last heartbeat. I try to be indecent when that's what